Hi, you're listening to Rich.
No.
Nope.
That's not how it goes, is it? Hi, I'm Rich.
How's it? All right, let's start again.
I, Rich.
Okay. Right.
Hi, I'm Rich.
And I'm Jimmy.
And you're listening to...
Rich and Jimmy Watch a Film.
Yes, you are, you lucky Neanderthals.
Welcome back. Welcome back once again.
So we have got an absolute treat in store for you on this episode of our podcast. Yeah. We are watching... Jimmy, take it away. I feel this is all about... This should be all coming from you. This is your thing. Your love, your passion.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Fucking without a doubt. This is one of my favourite films from probably my favourite writer of all time. We are watching Hunter S. Thompson's Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
What a film.
Fuck, man. I cannot wait for this. Like I say, it's my favourite film. It's been that fucking long since I've watched it. But through my teens into my mid-20s, a million times. Hello.
What?
Was that your watch?
So it just said, my watch just decided to start speaking. I think my watch wants to be part of a podcast. It says, here's what I found. Hunter S. Thompson, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, 12th of October 2018. One of my favourite moments in all of Thompson's writing.
Someone else. Yeah. I mean, I could...
Someone else is gushing like Jimmy.
Yeah, mirrors my sentiments completely, man. Honestly, I like... Probably seen this a million fucking times. Like, we were just so obsessed with this movie, and then I became... Like, me and my friends were so obsessed with this, and then, you know, finding Hunter S. Thompson and more of his writings and everything like that, just completely fell in love with his style and things like that. Like, oh, he's the man. He's the man.
Are you... So you say fell in love with his writing, so you're a fan of him as a writer... before, so you're not someone who's gone, oh, I like the film Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
No, yeah, absolutely I am. I was someone, yep, saw the film, just loved it, and I was like, I want to know more about this. And then my mum was like, oh yeah, he was a very prolific writer. She had an old copy of the book, and then she got me...
What book are you referring to?
Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, the book.
So Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas is a book written by Hunter S. Thompson, is that how it is?
Yeah, from like 1972, I think.
And then from that, they've read the book, and they've then made the film based upon the book.
Yeah, so they've been trying to turn that into a film since like the 80s.
Okay.
Just no one could sort of figure out how to do it, because it's just so fucking crazy.
I mean, it's mad.
It's madness, right? Like, and I, you know... Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, the film, Terry Gilliam's adaptation of it, I still think, like, there's so much that couldn't be captured from the book, because it is just nearly impossible. Like, and, you know, and with any adaptation as well, the book is one thing, the film is, it should always be its own thing as well. But I think Terry Gilliam did, like, the best that you could do terms of capturing it.
Back to our Monty Python episode that we released previously.
Yeah.
Gilliam.
nice little run on.
He also did Baron Munchausen, didn't he? There's a weird film called, like... There's something of Baron Munchausen by Terry Gilliam.
I don't know that one. I know, like, he did, like, Brazil and...
He's quite...
Like, Three Monkeys or something and...
Quite... 12 Monkeys.
12 Monkeys, that's
with,
it.
Brad Pitt?
I haven't seen it. I've never seen it. I've seen Brazil.
No, Bruce Willis. Bruce Willis.
Yes.
Oh, it's an absolutely fantastic movie.
I've never seen it.
Do you know what? I haven't seen that for a long time. We should do that in the future.
We'll add that to the list.
Future episode, yeah.
I've seen Brazil. I really enjoyed... Brazil, it's fucking bonkers, like very dystopian and a bit like great message in it and everything. But I think with this, he did the absolute best he could do. And I mean, the performances in it are just sensational. Like, Johnny Depp as Hunter Thompson / Raoul Duke, like, is just like perfect. He's so good at it.
I am a massive fan of Johnny Depp.
Yep.
And recently, people have made me feel quite guilty about that, because I don't really know what he's supposed to have done, or something that he's done has made him not likable.
Yeah, so it was all over like news and social media and stuff. I didn't really follow along with it because I couldn't give a shit about famous people's private lives.
No.
But basically, there was this whole thing with his wife at the, like, his ex-wife.
Is this Amber Heard?
Yes. So they met on the set of The Rum Diary, which is another adaptation of a Hunter S. Thompson novel.
Okay.
They met on the set there, got married, and then she had all these claims coming out that, like, he was super abusive and everything. And then basically, really, it actually all came out that she was actually quite psychotic, I think, and was, like, super abusive to him. But I think just the whole thing was a fucking mess, man. Like, again, I'm, like, I don't really know what was going on.
We'll,
I didn't
we'll
follow
sit
it.
Very neutrally on
yeah,
on,
totally,
on
man,
that.
Totally. But, you know, I mean, look, a famous guy in Hollywood, you could probably say, yeah, the guy's probably a prick. I think that would be fair to say of almost anyone as a blanket statement.
Well, I have seen... The thing is, I'm of the opinion that I've watched many films with Johnny Depp, and I've taken a lot of joy. Hours of my life have been taken up with it, just enjoying that man's work.
Oh, yeah.
I will continue to say that I am a fan of Johnny Depp because I don't really know the outside of his private life, like you say.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a difference between saying I enjoy someone's work and being like, oh, Johnny Depp is an awesome person.
Yeah.
You know, the like separation of art and artist is very important.
But, you know, if you were to rattle off a list of Johnny Depp films that are great, I mean, you could start with Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
What's Eating Input? Great.
Fucking, what's the one, Edward Scissorhands?
Edward Scissorhands.
Really good.
But any Tim Burton film that he's been part of. One, you know, Charlie and Chocolate Factory.
I never saw it.
What was the Charlie and Chocolate Factory he did? It wasn't called Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
It was, was it Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory?
Wonka. Willy Wonka.
Or Wonka, yeah. I can't remember, but I never saw it, to be fair.
The new Wonka film, he's not in that, but it's fantastic.
Is it?
It's so... Have you not seen it yet?
Nah.
Oh, my word.
This is the thing, right? I love the OG one so much that I just can't bring myself to watch anything else apart from the Gene Wilder one.
No, I totally understand that. Like, I am beyond love for that original. Yeah. The Tim Burton version is very good.
Yeah, yeah.
But the new Wonka film... Have you ever seen Paddington?
Yes. Yeah, I have.
What did you think of Paddington?
I liked it, man.
Yeah. Did it make you feel warm and fuzzy?
Absolutely.
As well?
And I'm pretty sure I've seen both of them, because they're normally on around Christmas, aren't they? Yeah. And yeah, man, just good, wholesome. Good, wholesome fun.
So you've just summed up Wonka.
Yeah, okay. Right.
It's just...
The newest one.
Yeah, the newest one. It's just, you know, your heart is full by the end of the film. You're watching...
As full as Augustus Gloop.
He never gets full. Yeah, definitely watch Wonka.
Okay. But we're not here to talk about Wonka,
are
we?
We're not here to talk about Wonka. We're here to talk about Where the Buffaloes Roam. How do you feel about that, Bill Murray?
Yeah, I like it, man. I've only watched it maybe once or twice. And I think as well, there might have been a thing where I watched it too close to my fanboy, like the early... Yeah. You know, when you first get into something and you have that fanboy obsession where nothing will beat it.
Yeah.
I think I watched Where the Buffalo Roam at that sort of point in my life, and I need to go back and watch it again.
So I made the joke about Where the Buffalo Roam there, but for those of you that don't know, Where the Buffalo Roam is another Hunter S. Thompson film, originally. It's a bit older than Fear and Loathing.
Yeah, it's probably 10, 15 years older.
Bill Murray stars in it as Hunter S. Thompson.
Yep.
It's a very good film.
Oh, it's great. And then very much sort of encompassing, as opposed to just like the adaption of the book Fear and Loathing, a lot of it's more about Thompson the person, and like his like there is the part of the film where he is writing Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. But like it's awesome, like because like Murray, when he made it, he moved in with Hunter S. Thompson. They became really good friends to try and get all these mannerisms and everything down. And they just, you know, obviously both pretty crazy guys, became best friends. Depp did the exact same thing, preparing for this role. Moved in with him, lived at his compound at Woody Creek in Colorado for like 3 months. And they became really good mates. But
is he still alive now, Hunter S. Thompson?
No, he shot himself in like 2005.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. He'd always said that he was going to kill himself. Like, in a lot of his writings and stuff, he says, like, once I get bored, like, I'm good, like, and I'll do it this way. And he did. And then...
Do you know what? That sounds sad, but actually, the reality of that is that actually, that's not that sad.
No.
He went out on his terms.
Totally. And there's a great clip of him from the 80s where he's, like, drawing what he wants to happen. No, sorry, he's got Ralph Steadman, his longtime collaborator, who does the amazing illustrations for a lot of his stuff.
And also did your amazing tattoo.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I stole it. I stole his design for my tattoo.
We'll put a photo up on our Instagram feed of Jimmy's tattoo. He's got an amazing Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas tattoo.
Yeah, yeah. For Ralph Steadman's drawing. So, like, Ralph's drawing the funeral that Thompson wants wants, and he's Thompson's just crazy rambling, chain smoking. He's saying to him, "No, damn it, Ralph, it needs to be more fingers on two thumbs on the fist, damn it." And so basically, it's like this giant 50-foot tall pole with a clenched fist with two thumbs, one on each side, clutching a peyote button, which has become like the symbol of gonzo journalism, which is what Thompson invented. And he's saying they're going to shoot my ashes out of this 50-foot cannon over the Colorado Mountains, and there'll be fireworks and everything like loaded in with the fireworks. And so Depp paid to make that happen, and so he got exactly what he wanted. He shot himself exactly when he was done. He invited his whole family around. His son was there with his grandkids, and he just went into another room. They heard what they thought sounded like just a book drop, but it was the gun, like the muffled gunshot going off. His son went in, found him, took the gun from his hand, went out, emptied the magazine, just firing the rounds into the air as a salute to his dad, called the police, and then Depp made sure that it went exactly as he wanted. So they were playing, I think it was Bob Dylan's Mr. Tambourine Man, as they launched his ashes out of this giant 50-foot tall fucking cannon and like launched him over the Colorado Mountains.
So that story should have made me sad, but
it's really affirming, isn't it?
Like, it's just nice that, especially if his family were on board with that and went like, okay, completely, if that's what you need to do, all right, we love you and we'll miss you, but
yep,
off you go.
Yeah, exactly. And he was very sick at the time. Like, he was very unwell.
Like as in, with what was he unwell with?
They just a lot of physical health conditions and stuff, and a lot of it obviously linked to, you know, a lifetime of, like, alcohol and drug abuse and smoking, you know, fucking three packets of cigarettes a day.
As we'll see from watching Fear and Loathing again, he was not shy with drugs.
Loved them. The man absolutely fucking loved them. And there is a... you read his earlier stuff, like his writings and stuff as a journalist, and it's really good. But when he starts, you know, taking hallucinogenics and really going into the drugs, there he just hits this whole other stride, man. Like, he was such an important dude for the counterculture and everything. And like, and just for me personally, like, growing up, like, finding him at that age where you're starting to learn about getting interested in politics and things, for me and my political ideology and stuff, he was a huge influence on that. Like, and just how important shit like that is as well. Like, yeah.
So, going back to the film, how did you feel? So, you were a fan of the film.
Yep.
You were a fan of the book before you were
So, I was a fan of the film. Given the book, and then I just started reading everything I could about Thompson, getting all these other books together.
So, as someone who also fell in love with that film quite quickly, as in the second I saw it, but what was it about it for you that really tickled your pickle?
The anarchy.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, the anarchy. And like, and I think that's as well with his writing, is it the, just, it's so fucking balls to the wall mental. I'd never seen a film like it. And then reading his stuff, and I'd never read about a person like that who'd live just so fancy free of not giving a single fuck and like putting it down in print of like, fuck you, here's why, you know, blah. And they're all being, or celebrating someone and being like, this is the guy. You know, if politics was what he was most known for, and being like, this is the person that you should be voting for because of these fucking reasons. Like, yeah. An amazing person. But what about you? What about the film?
The thing, again, that I didn't realise it was a real person when I first watched the film.
Yeah.
I just thought it was this, like, crazy film.
Yeah.
But there's one thing that really sticks with me, and I know we've quoted it before in other episodes of our podcast, and it's so innocuous in the scheme of the whole film, of everything that goes weird and wonderful. But there's a bit where he just drives his car up to the front of a casino and stops. And someone says to him, "You can't park your car there." And he replies with, "What? Is this not a reasonable place to park?" And I think in that moment, it really encompasses everything about that film, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
Like...
And you haven't seen it till that moment. It's been very tight shots of both people talking to each other, but then you see the wide shot of the car, and he's parked up on the front steps of the casino, and the guy's just going ballistic, and he's just like, reasonable, you're on the goddamn sidewalk.
Yeah, and, you know, like, I think everything else that happens in that film, the drugs, the trashing of hotel rooms, the seeing dinosaurs,
yeah,
and crashing cars... There's just something beautiful about the fact that in this moment they decided to also reference the fact that he didn't park in the best place. And I think that really stuck with me because I thought, yeah, this guy just didn't give a fuck.
Not a single fuck about any conventions or anything like that. And, you know, like, I never knew, like, what the term, like, iconoclast was until I learned about him, which means is someone who uses imagery and, like, conventional norms to then tear those things down and the systems that they prop up. And I love that. I love that idea of, like, going to Vegas, the heart of, like, you know, the fucking, like, conservative America, like, consumerism and, like, the fucking bright lights and just making a complete monster of yourself because the country was in such bad times in, like, 1971 or whenever he went and wrote this, like...
But also that's what's expected of you. If you went to, oh, I'm on a stag do in Vegas, you go, yeah. Oh, you're going to get...
Well, but back then, when this was written, it was a family destination.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, so it used to be a family destination, and that was the whole thing. It was plastic, all nice, here's me with my 3.5 children and my wife. There was the prostitutes and things like that, but that was like the seedy side of it that was kept away. The main drag was all family entertainment, and it was this very, he saw it, like Hunter saw it as this very plastic Nixonian image of America that was not true at the time because the country was tearing itself apart, and that's what they end up doing in Fear and Loathing is tearing themselves apart, becoming the monsters that they saw their country becoming.
Wow. And also, in the opening scenes, you get Spider-Man jumping into the back of their convertible.
So, right, that's... Yeah, I did want to touch on that. The cameos in this film. Fucking Tobey Maguire, you got... oh, shit, who else is in there? You got Gary Busey, you've got Cameron Diaz.
Cameron Diaz?
Yeah, she's in it. She's a reporter at one point in an elevator. And Benicio Del Toro makes everyone feel really fucking uncomfortable.
he's just amazing. Have you seen? Oh, he's so good. Have you heard that thing about when they're in Usual Suspects when they're all lined up and they're all laughing? It's because he can't stop farting. I just love that. I love that so much.
He's an amazing actor as well. Like again, like the two of them in this just carrying the film. It, like they're just going for it in every fucking scene of this movie. They are absolutely just fucking going for it.
Wow. Well, I can't wait to start watching this now.
Me either.
Shall we start waffling on?
Yeah. I would like to point out as well, I'm drinking alcohol-free beer doing this, and this is going to be the first time out of 1,000,001 times that I've seen this film that I've ever been sober watching this movie.
Well, you and me both, Jimmy. Yeah. Oh, actually, no. Right. I'm drinking Jack Daniels, so I won't be watching this.
Hunter
sober.
Would be proud. Yeah. Hunter would be very proud.
Was that his drink of choice?
No, his was Wild Turkey, but still, at least you're drinking.
I don't think they sell that in co-op. Right, okay, so we'll see you on the other side. Yeah. Enjoy the sound bites, and we'll come back and regale you with what we thought of the film.
We had 2 bags of grass, 75 pellets of mescaline, 5 sheets of high-powered blotter acid, a salt shaker half full of cocaine, a whole galaxy of multicolored uppers, downers, screamers, laughers, also a quarter tequila, quarter rum, case of beer, pint of raw ether, and 2 dozen amyls.
Wait! We can't stop here. This is Bat Country.
What the hell do you think you're doing? This is not a parking area. You've got to move your car.
You can't park your car here.
Excuse me. Sir.
What?
You can't park... Hey! You can't park your car here.
Why not? Is this not a reasonable place to park?
Reasonable? You're on a sidewalk! It's the sidewalk!
And we're back in the room.
Hell of a trip, man. Hell of a trip.
What a film.
Yeah, fuck me. It's so good, dude. Like, you know, I was just saying, like, before we hit record on this, that my only criticism, and this is the only one I'm going to make before we start gushing about the film, slightly, maybe a little bit too long. Like, we kind of went out of it a little bit there towards the end. We weren't so much concentrating on watching the movie. But, like, that's a tiny negative. Like, you know, it's fucking great. And there's, you know, they cut stuff out of the book. A book, like, it's always going to be long, isn't it? You know what I mean? Like, adapting the book, like, to get it done right. And I think that's the best way that you could possibly adapt that film. Adapt that book into a film.
I mean, I've not read the book, but I can imagine the task of taking a book, cutting bits out of it to know what will make a film. It's quite heavy duty.
Yeah, and it's just bonkers as well. Like, the book is fucking insane. Like, it's absolutely insane. The
film's pretty... pretty bonkers.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And they did such a good job of it, I think. Like, I think Terry Gilliam, you know, like just absolutely fucking, you know, hats off to the man for getting that done, because that is just ridiculous that it turned out looking that good. And, like, we were gushing watching it, weren't we, about, like, the cinematography of it all.
It's so lovely. Like, there was some incredible scenes where, like, the dinosaur orgy, for example.
Yeah.
And how he's there, they're fucking... then they're not fucking.
Yeah, and like, and there's blood and mud all over the floor. It's... and like, and then all of a sudden just gone, like Gonzo had disappeared, which is what kicked the trip off, and then all of like, and then all of a sudden he's just back, just blah, 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 just going crazy, just muttering nonsense in his ear, swinging a gun in his face.
Well, I think I said at the time, I've never taken acid, but I can imagine this is what it would look like.
Yeah, yeah, I've never tripped that hard of seeing like that crazy of a thing, but the little bits of it, like, so when it starts, when he's sitting there talking to, so he's looking off in the opposite direction to Dr. Gonzo at the bar, and he's talking to Gonzo as if he's there, and he turns around and the camera pans out and Gonzo's gone. That is very much like things that happen on acid, where you are sort of just losing this, your perspective of time and stuff, and like, and you think you're talking to someone and you swore that they were right there, and all of a sudden they fucking disappeared, and that will then set off the bad part of the trip, which is what happened. So, like, they captured it all just so well.
Because it's quite anecdotal, isn't it, in the respect that there's not really a story.
Yeah, no, exactly.
It's just a couple of people that do a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
This is what happens to them whilst they're doing a thing.
They took a couple of the best parts of the book and did it, like, transcribed it word for word. So there's the bit in the middle of the film where he's writing about, like, the downfall of the counterculture movement, the hippie movement, the power to the people and everything. And he's talking about, you know, like the giant, beautiful wave that was rolling forward. And he says, you know, you can go to Vegas and with the right set of eyes, you can look west and you can see like the high water mark where the wave broke, it rolled back on itself.
That's when he's sat at a typewriter, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And he's musing.
So is that taken straight out of the book?
Word for word from the book. And it's like...
That's a really powerful scene, that one.
It's fantastic. And it's such good writing as well. Like, Thompson always thought that it was his best piece that he ever wrote, and when he would get invited to lectures and things, that was always the thing that he wrote. And so I think, like as you said, there isn't really a story, and there isn't really a story to the book either, but I think in the book the point he's trying to make about the collapse of the flower there, that's not Fear and Loathing, but that's one of his other books, but yeah, like the point that he was trying to make of the collapse of this of the flower power movement and this beautiful thing they thought they had, that really comes across a lot more in the book, I think.
Do you think I should read it? Like,
I think everybody should read it.
But why?
Because it really gives you that great sense of, like, you're reading it, and it really gives you that great sense of, no matter how good the movement could be, no matter how pure the intentions, there will always be people who kind of, it will get taken and spun into something else, and it will only leave like a ton of broken people in the wake. So, like, he's very critical of it all. Like, even though he's using all of the drugs in the book, a lot of it is to show, like, what happened to the hippie movement that was supposed to be this wonderful, beautiful thing, and it got corrupted by all these people who made a celebrity for themselves, like Tim Leary and the guys from, like, the Chicago 7, the Chicago 9.
I've got no idea.
It was like this big political case back in the day, and it was like a lot of the famous hippies. This guy, what was his name? Herbie Kaufman, I think was his name. I can't fucking remember. Anyway,
don't you think that is referenced in the film? The scene where he's Abby in Coffin. The bathroom and he spills some LSD on his sleeve.
Yeah.
And then Flea is licking it off, and then someone in a suit comes in and is absolutely tortured by what he sees.
It's freaked out, yeah. And the thing of, like, not knowing.
Isn't that just like a massive metaphor for the whole thing?
Totally, yeah. The straights will never get to know that side, and they secretly want to. Yeah, the squares.
Ooh, put a tie on you, motherfucker.
and they will never get to know it. But then, yeah, and the whole thing is like, yeah, so Abby Kaufman was the guy I was trying to think of, and Tim Leary were these big counterculture guys, but they really co-opted the movement for their own celebrity, and they just destroyed themselves and a heap of other young people as well by just abusing drugs. And what really was left at the end of the counterculture and 60s movement was a lot of brain damaged and ill people from taking too much acid and just screwing in parks and not actually fucking doing anything about what was meant to happen, like what they were supposed to be doing.
Wow.
So that's why I think you should read it, because why I think everybody should read it, because that is just true all the time, in that people co-opt things that should be really great and use them, and it will turn out fucked up.
And it will turn out fucked.
So yeah, that's what I think everybody should read. It. It's also just super important as well, I think, in terms of literature. Maybe more so like American, definitely American literature. It's very important. But his other book, Fear and Loathing on the Campaign Trail 72, is like one of the best political things I've ever read.
Read a lot of political things?
Yeah. Fair few. Wow. I like politics, man. I'm very interested in it.
Ignore what Jimmy looks like. If you're watching this on our YouTube channel, he is actually cultured.
Yeah, man. I enjoy it. And I think that's one of the best, because it just cuts through all the bullshit, and it's very much about thinking for yourself and, you know, in terms of politics, and not believing the fucking spin and everything and shit like that. It's very fucking well done. Very well done. But it's chunky. It's like fucking, you know, it's about that thick. It's a full 18 months of following the politicians around on the 1972 election.
Do you think that this film would hit your top five?
Ooh. Ooh. Nah, top 10.
Ooh.
Ooh. Ooh. Top 10, I reckon. Top 10. Maybe not the top 5.
Whereabouts in top 10?
Very close to the top 5.
Are you going to say 6?
Yeah, it was 7. Yeah. Probably hovering around there, dude. It's a fucking banger. Like, what about you? Where's it rank for you, do you reckon?
I see it as quite insignificant, if I'm going to be honest.
Yeah, like, yep.
I can appreciate that it's an absolute banger of a film, and I love it. And again, it was like we said on our last episode about the fact that I hadn't seen Life of Brian for a very long time. Or maybe our future episode.
Depending
on how we put this out. But I remembered it all the time. I remembered it so vividly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's no doubt in my mind that this is an excellent movie.
Mm.
But is it a movie that brings me lots of happiness? No, I don't think so, because inherently it's quite a sad film.
Oh, it's dark, man. It's really dark. There's nothing happy about it. Like, you know, Gonzo and Duke are not good people. You're not meant to be rooting for them.
So, you know, you spend the whole film watching these two people that aren't very pleasant.
Yeah.
Doing not pleasant things to potentially pleasant people.
Yep. But that is a wonderful metaphor for the system that was in America at the time, and like probably still is, like a wonderful metaphor of the thing of like really good people get hurt. Like
that stopped again.
Oh, has it? Fuck's sake.
That's so annoying.
Says it's on like 11%.
Well, that's.
You want to leave it?
Yeah, I mean, if you're watching this/slash listening to it, we're obviously having technical issues with our live. Fuck it.
With the camera.
we press record, it stopped. Who cares?
You can still hear the audio. I'm sure Rich just put in a nice little title card. The audio kept going.
Yeah, listen to this tune. Ready? Great. So, Jimmy, let's wrap this episode up then.
Yeah, I think so, man. I got nothing.
It's a quick episode.
Yeah.
I feel like if you've watched Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, you know where we're coming from in the respect that, like, we could break it down and talk about it, but
there's
not a lot of point.
Not really. And the main overarching thing is, yeah, the downfall of the American dream and, like, the counterculture and everything like that. And again, if you want a really good insight on all of that, just read the book. Yeah. He does it way better than we fucking could.
Yeah, I mean...
I will just say real quickly, though, as well, Nicola Pecoroni was the cinematographer that we looked up when we were watching it. We didn't touch on that. Her cinematography in this film is fucking fantastic.
Spot on.
The way that it's shot and filmed for all the different effects of the different drugs that they're on and things like that just completely pull you in. There was one point where you said you zoned out for like 5 minutes. Completely pulled into the film. Like.
Absolutely. Like, it's an incredible film to watch.
Yeah, yeah, visually just stunning.
Like, I remember watching this when I first started potentially dabbling with a little bit of the old marijuana.
Goodness me.
Now that I'm old, I have to say it in that way. With
goodness me.
no, but, like, it was definitely a stoner film of mine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, that's how I got into it, yeah.
And I used to laugh at it. Like, it was funny. They were all on these drugs, and, like, this is funny. But now I can watch it with a different eye,
yeah,
and it's a different film altogether, yeah. And it's just a very sad film.
It is, man. Yeah, it is. It's ugly, like, and it gets visually ugly at the end. Like, you watch, like, all the card smashes and edits, and like all the screechy, loud, just music going over the top of it all, like, and it's all just this cacophony of sound and horrible things happening, like, and then they run back into all the characters that they've come across, like Christina Ricci's Christian girl who gets like drugged and potentially assaulted by like Gonzo. They run back into her and they run into all these people that they've seen again, and it's like they've just completely lost the fucking plot by that point. It's awful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we can end it on, it's an incredible film.
Yep.
That is also awful.
Yeah. Yeah. It's yeah, exactly. Absolutely. It's it is that thing, like you said, of the funny stoner thing, but there's a lot more to it. There's fucking way more to that, to this movie.
And read the book if you don't know what we're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Read the book, and read also as well, if you have the time, want to seek it out, The Curse of Lono, The Banshee Screams for Buffalo Meat, which was Thompson's obituary that he wrote for the real-life guy who inspired Dr. Gonzo. It's very brutal, but very beautifully written. If you want. It's fucking great.
Yeah, or just... be happy.
Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I think it's quite affirming. There's some nice things about friendship in there.
So there you go, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Yeah,
an excellent movie that's definitely worth a watch.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy, you got anyone you want to shout out on this episode? Any podcasts you've been listening to recently, or anything like that? Or do you want to just move on and pretend other podcasts don't exist?
I can't think of anyone off the top of my head because you put me on the spot. Can't think of anyone, sorry.
No, nothing spontaneous. No,
sorry. I mean, you know, obviously, Opinionated Lush is really good friends of ours. Spooky Spooky Sips as well. Those girls are fucking awesome.
Spooky Sips?
They're like a horror review podcast. I can't remember whether the girls are American or Canadian. Maybe even both. Who knows? And
Oh, hang on, Jimmy. You can't say that. All right.
They're from North America. And
I feel like this is tricky ground. what are they called? Spooky Sips?
Spooky Sips.
Spooky Sips. If you are listening or have listened, I apologize for Jimmy. please let us know if you are American or Canadian. That's awful on my xenophobic friend.
Fuck off. Yeah, no, they're worth a listen, man. Horror review podcast who like match up their drinks to the films that they watch every week.
Ooh, lovely.
Yeah, very funny. Very funny stuff. They're great. Yeah, there we go. And great. If you want to follow us on social medias and give us any kind of shout out, it's all at Rich and Jimmy on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. We got the YouTube channel now as well. Once again, hello at Rich and Jimmy. And if you want to drop us a line at all, it's Rich and Jimmy Watch a Film, all one word, all lowercase, at gmail.com.
Brilliant. So
I think I just had a stroke.
You're masturbating again. So anyway, thank you so much for listening to our Fear and Loathing and
blah, blah, blah.
Blah. thank you, Jimmy. Just do something. Say words. I've forgotten how to do it.
Yeah, as Rich said, thank you so much for listening. Please like, share, subscribe, send it to your friends. Everything. Blah, 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 blah. Like, share, subscribe, send it to all your friends. Give us some reviews. We love all that shit. Let us know that you're listening. Thank you so much, as always. I guess for a quote, I'll go with one of Thompson's that's not from the book, but a good one of his, where he says, I would never push onto anyone alcohol, drugs, or madness, but they always seem to work for me. And that's words you can fucking use.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. So stay safe, and we won't hear them next time.
They'll hear us next time.
You'll hear us next time. You'll hear us next time. Thank you so much for listening. Take care. We love you loads, and thank you. Bye 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 bye.
Bye bye.